Yo, it's Freedom Fiends Live. I'm Nima Vedati over here in the ATX. We've also got Michael W. Dean out there in his windowless bunker. You may now stop kneeling. Stand up, please. It's the Freedom Fiends.
This is Mr. Michael Dean broadcasting live and worldwide from a windowless bunker at an undisclosed location in the rural Wild Mountain West in the occupied states of America.
Yes.
No
and
kneeling.
Here on the Freedom
no
Fiends,
kneeling.
We are going to end your positive behavior intervention.
Yeah, and before we get around to kneeling, we want to welcome a new affiliate. Yay! We got Lakeshore Community Radio, AM 1650 in Rowlett, Texas. Yeah, mm-hmm. Saturday nights at 10, the Fiends play delayed, and it's a wonderful thing. And that is that Rowlett, Texas is the next town over from and touches Garland, Texas, which people know from, that's what Arlen, Texas is based on in King of the Hill. So, So I don't know. I don't remember what the next town over is in King of the Hill. Do you?
No. It's just cool that there could be Little Dale Gribbles out there listening.
It's East
is
Arlen.
Is it East Arlen?
Yeah, but I think Garland is, Rowlett's actually west. No, you know what? It's east. It's east. So, yeah, East Arlen. Yep.
East, west.
Maybe. But, you know, that's all fantasy, and we don't know anything about that part of Texas. Do you? You're from Texas.
No. Texas is big, man.
It's huge. No. It's kind of like, Europe. Do you know anything about Europe? It's like the size of Europe, isn't it?
I don't know about that. It's maybe the size of France or something. But, but Texas is very varied in its culture and its landscape. Beavis and Butthead, Mike Judge has actually said, was based on his time he spent in the parts where New Mexico and Texas collide, out in that desert region, Las Cruces and El Paso, that kind of area.
Well, the high school they go to is actually based on a high school he went to and my friend Eric McFadden went to in Albuquerque.
Right. And the constant laugh of Beavis and Butthead, was based on something somebody he knew in school did all the time. But it was a smart person. It was like a geeky, nerdy kid who always laughed before constantly as he was going about his day.
Do you think he gets a penny every time one of those errs?
I doubt it.
Yeah.
I bet he wishes he did. Maybe he'll send a lawyer letter to Mike Judge.
Oh, that would be
for
heinous.
For Beavis and Butthead royalties.
Yes. I inspired your brain to work. Give me money. Well, that's kind of happened. That's kind of what happened with the two guys that started Facebook. I mean, my understanding of that, at least from the movie, which is somewhat based on reality, is that the two Winklevi, as they call them, the Winklevoss brothers, the twins from the Harvard rowing team, the crew team, basically hired the guy. Who's the guy who started Facebook? I don't even know anymore. Who's that guy? Yeah, that guy,
care.
Mark Zuckerberg.
That's
They hired him to like come up with a social media network, and social media networks already existed, but they said, we want you to make one about Harvard. And he didn't deliver. Zuckerberg didn't deliver, just kind of like, I don't even think he took money. He just went kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever, I'll do it. And then took the idea and went, well, that's an interesting idea, but I want to do it this other way, and took it this other way. You know, it's kind of like the Winklevi brothers sued him, and now they're investing in Bitcoin and sort of trying to maybe corner the Bitcoin market and get Bitcoin to be somewhat honored by the U.S. government or controlled by the U.S. government, and they would stand to benefit from that, which is very common.
They want it to be regulated so that they can be rent seekers.
Yeah. That's allegedly. They are very litigious young middle-aged men, and
apparently
have more Bitcoin than God. They'll find some lawyer they can pay in Bitcoin.
Does God have Bitcoin, or did he lose his password?
Well, God has everything, doesn't he?
God has everything, I guess so. All right, fair enough. But should we get to the kneeling?
Yeah, speaking of
take a knee, people.
Speaking of people treating the state like their God, which is, as we say, kicking God off the throne, so you shouldn't do it. Go ahead. Talk about the kneeling. You?
Me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It sounded like something was going on your end. Yeah. So this is actually on MSN, and it's good to see this out in the mainstream. Headline is: Elementary school kids told to kneel when they see their principal. And of course, parents are not happy about this when they found out about it. I guess a local affiliate news station, KCAL9, did a story on it. And one mother complained the principal would come out, lift his arms, and tell them to go back to class, of course, after they are kneeling, because the children have been instructed to drop to one knee and wait there until the principal raises his arms like they're dogs or something, and you must sit before the principal. Kneel, slave. And yeah. When you first saw the headline I sent you, you go, oh, it's probably a Catholic school because they kneel. But no, man, this is the god of the state that they're revering. They're revering the priesthood of the state, the public school.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking to me, but, you know, it doesn't really surprise me that much when you've got pledging allegiance, which, you know, it's been said a lot, but it's worth saying again that Bellamy, the guy who came up with the Pledge of Allegiance, was a socialist, American socialist Christian, and he was a guy who, what he did for a living was he sold American flags, and he basically wanted to find a way to sell more flags, so he came up with a whole kind of pledge to do it. And originally, you didn't put your hand on your heart when you said the Pledge of Allegiance in America. You did a salute with your arm that looked very much like a Nazi salute and was actually later adopted by the Nazis, which
maybe
is
that's
horrifying.
What we should do to monetize the fiends is we can sell fiend flags.
Create
a pledge allegiance to the fiends.
No.
Pledge allegiance to the nap.
Yeah, yeah, I'm really horrified by pledges. You know, that's actually a thing. I know that it to be a member of AA, you have to remain anonymous at the level of press, radio, and films, and that's read at the beginning of every meeting. And I've studied AA as an interesting – I kind of like the way it works, and I believe and have written a book that partially deals with how you can use the 12 traditions of – of did I say L.A.? The 12 traditions of AA – of L.A., of AA to run – you know, organizations, because the guy who founded AA, Bill W., the co-founder, in the 50s, in the book 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, talked about, he actually said that AA was a synthesis of anarchy and democracy, and he actually used both of those terms correctly, in that it was an opt-in democracy, whereas all other democracies, you know, if 51% of your neighbors vote that it's punishable by death if you wear a blue shirt, then you have to go along with it, which is not voluntary, but it is a voluntary system. And yeah, man. Yeah, there's the kneeling thing. there's a thing at the beginning of the AA meetings where they say, or it's in the book where they say there's no pledge, and that's based on the fact that before AA, the movement that was attempting to get people sober, which also was attempting to outlaw alcohol, there were some Christian movements that were
the temperance movement.
Yeah, they had a pledge and they distributed it through churches and asked everyone in the room to make a pledge to not drink. And that's not how you stay sober. That's not one day at a time. That's an oath. And oaths generally really don't work. I mean, look at the oaths that the enforcers take to the Constitution when they're elected and then usually break those oaths before lunch that day.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I guess that's another good point is how effective are things like pledges anyway? Does it really affect kids? Does it brainwash them like it seems like it's doing? Like the whitest kids you know?
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? Who knows how that works? And Mr. Nima Vidati, are you there? Nima, 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 Nima. So, I don't know. I don't really know what things do like that and how that works. But I wanted to read a related story. It says, parents not thrilled that Bronx principal moonlights. Parents not thrilled that Bronx principal moonlights in violent movies was a related story on this this bit before Nima got abducted by state aliens for a minute.
Yeah.
There's a related story on here about parents not being thrilled that Bronx principal moonlights in violent movie. And there's a principal of some school there, and she acted in some B movie where she plays a gang member and swears a lot and points guns at people, which, you know, is basically just someone acting like the state without the state's authorization, because cops constantly swear at people and point guns at them. But this is a gang,
And this is a public school that she is the principal of.
Yeah. And I think the takeaway from this story and the, you know, parents shocked that kids are forced to kneel before their principal in this other story. I mean, I think the takeaway is just these are both. It's just, you know, private education, man, homeschooling. These are,
yeah,
you know, why be upset that the person you're forced to send your kids to is doing something you don't like when you don't have to be forced to send your kids there?
Yet.
They're working
that's,
on
that's,
it.
That's the operative thing. But yeah, you're 100% right. I mean, you don't go to your Taco Bell and tell them, you know, that you don't have to have a school board meeting or something like that for any other private business. It's not about politics. It's about whether or not you choose to spend your money there. And so the model where people can do nothing but complain about their public schools, well, pull your kids out of the public school while you still can.
You'll still teach pay them for yourself. Them, though. You still pay for them.
That's the whole thing, isn't it? Yeah.
It'd be kind of like if you didn't like Taco Bell and wanted to go to Burger King instead, but you still had to pay for lunch right. at Taco Bell every day to get to go to Burger King.
Right, right, right. Yeah. It's a horrid system because it lacks that concept of
freedom
something being voluntary, right?
Yeah.
You know, and I like Butler Schaefer has recently wrote a thing called Distinctions Without Meaning, because people are talking about the NSA and they're like, well, why do you care so much? Google spies on you. You know, your Gmails are recorded, this and that. But the thing is, you don't have to use Google. You don't have to use Gmail. And it's kind of beating it with a hammer, but he says that's like saying there's no distinction between rape and consensual sex. You know, intercourse is taking place in both situations. What's the diff? Well, the diff is in one situation, partners are consenting to it and agreeing, and nobody's being forced, which means they're being harmed and aggressive.
It's the difference between a boxing match and getting beat up in an alley.
Yes, yes. That's another good one. because obviously, you know, that's we've made that distinction before, too. There's a difference between violence and aggression. A boxing match is really violent, but there's no aggression involved. Both people are doing it on purpose. You know, they're in that ring. They've trained for it. They know what to expect. And if they get knocked out, that's what they signed up for.
And they're probably getting paid for it if they're good at it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Whereas in a government system, you only get paid to aggress. You don't get paid. Well, I guess they give you back little bits.
Well,
of
you get paid either way. That's the thing, right? You're not paid based on
performance.
Well, in the sense that the better you are, the more people aren't going to come there, and we'll have more fiends right after we take this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range. 5 centuries after the first spaceflight, the stars remain beyond humanity's reach. So a mad scientist enlists the aid of a young technician, Nicole Orem, as they travel through the solar system, encountering the hazards of space and human treachery. Quantum Vibe, Volume 1, Nicole, collects the first 400 strips of the epic sci-fi webcomic series, available now from the major online bookstores or direct from bigheadpress.com.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Guns and Weed,
Buy Sheep for Sheep on Sheep,
and 2 designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Yeah, it's the Freedom Fiends Live. I'm Nima Budati. We've also got Michael Dean, King of Nestlandia, the Micronation.
Yes.
How's it going, man?
I'm in a windowless bunker. And later in today's show, we're going to talk about underground houses that are not windowless and are not bunkers and actually are quite nice.
quite nice. Yes. Yes.
And we're not. What? It's not a new advertiser. It's a book that you can buy on how to build them yourself. And
yes,
we're going to read some excerpts from.
Michael is saying that for free.
Yeah, I'm saying that for free, man. I like it. Yeah. I like it. I mean, this guy's. It's written by a hippie with a gun who lives out in the woods. I don't even know if. I mean, if he's building houses for $50. I don't think we could if we took ads, what would he pay us in candied pine cones? I don't know. I'm sounding like a city boy. I'm sounding like a city boy. I don't want to.
Yeah. Pay us in ammo.
There you go.
I'd take ammo.
Yeah.
Yes. Is that taxed? If somebody pays you in ammo, does the government get a couple of rounds of 9mm?
I'm sure they'd like it to be. I mean, basically, they want, you know, legally everything's taxable unless it's tax exempt, which not much is. So, you know, to enforce that, I mean, basically they'd have to have cameras in everyone's homes, which they're working
on.
Which
they want.
They probably already have microphones in everyone's homes through.
They already have those vans that shoot the millimeter waves that they porno scan you with at the airports that can drive and see what's going on inside your home. How fun is that? Yeah, and Stop and Frisk is moving on to Detroit. Where will it be next?
I saw a Hollywood movie the other day where someone shoots down a drone with a rifle. It's the new Bourne movie. It's the new Bourne movie that doesn't have what's his name in it. Who's what's his name? That Hollywood gun grabber,
Matt Damon.
Yeah, this is the guy that played James Bond last. I think maybe I don't know. I can't keep up with all these gun grabbers. But this is supposed to be Bourne's son. But it's weird because it takes place now, so it's like I don't. And they're like the same age, so I don't know how it works. But time travel, maybe, you know, the God in the basket. The God in the basket is the term for something in writing or theater or movies where a magical thing happens, and you're supposed to go, "Oh, it's okay." And it's from in Greek theater. They would have an image of a god in a basket that they would lower down with a rope.
You know? I always called it Deus Ex Machina.
Yeah,
God in the machine.
Yeah. That's it.
Yeah. But I can't tell if it's me, like I've matured in my media viewing habits, or if movies just are way worse than they used to be. Like I drive by movie theaters is probably my closest interaction, and I look at the titles and I just go, ugh.
Well, it's a combination of things. Good. For one thing, the military-industrial film complex was a joke term we made up a while back, but it actually exists in that a lot of movies are sponsored by the U.S. government or the Department of Defense or the Army, or
they're paid a consulting fee for it.
And they're actually, you know, they're usually in the credits somewhere in those long credits that scroll by really fast. And to the point where most ads now, and most good big Hollywood movies or TV shows that are well done are ads for state aggression in some way. You know, I mean, I watch cop shows. It's my guilty pleasure. The reason is because I like well written and well acted and well directed and well filmed and well edited drama. That is my favorite media to consume. And unfortunately, you know, there's a saying like, why should the devil get all the best musicians? Why should the state get all the best filmmakers and TV makers? But it's true.
They don't. I mean, look at Orange is the New Black and Weeds. Yeah, those are basically anti-drug war, anti-state in a sense.
Anti-state aggression.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's one problem. Another problem is like, why do you want to go pay, you know, $50 or more for two people to go to a movie and have popcorn when for about $500 you can buy almost a home theater system these days and not have cell phones going off and not have rude people talking and not have to deal with the youngins. You know, as you get older, you don't want the youngins around unless they're your youngins, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, somebody wrote an op-ed, I think like a month ago, about how there should be movie theaters where it's okay to have cell phones and people can text and talk during the movie for the casual movie viewer. And people went ballistic on it, saying, no, film is a thing. It's an American institution and it must be – it's our sacred cow and it must be respected. And I kind of feel like why would people argue about that if somebody thinks it'll make money to have this casual movie house? Do it. I mean, there's room for all in, I think, the movie watching industry. I mean, here in Austin, we had the Alamo Draft House, and now everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, at least in this area. And I think in Salt Lake, they even have a place called Brewies. And the concept is you go and you can get a meal, and there's waitresses that come around and refill your beer while you watch the movie.
Some people would probably say that's
not pure. We can't do that.
I've been an invited filmmaker at the Alamo Draft House and showed my DIY or die how to survive Drive's independent artist film in Austin. It was great. Had a good showing, did a good Q&A, got paid, and got some chicken wings. It was wonderful. All right, we'll be back with more Fiends.
Howdy, I'm Ben Stone from the Bad Quaker Podcast. I'll teach you the difference between the government and the state, why the government is nothing without the state, and how to dissolve the state while remaining peaceful and even calm. I knew the state was a losing proposition decades before that was cool. Check out the Bad Quaker Podcast at badquaker.com. We have a forum and it's got gardening tips. That's badquaker.com.
Welcome back, Fiends. It's Nima Vidati. We've also got Michael W. Dean.
Good evening.
Good morning. This is the Freedom Fiends. You know, it's the Freedom Fiends radio show. That's what it is.
Good afternoon, depending on where you're listening. It's 11:34 a.m. where I'm listening, but we are on radio stations in places where it's 12:34 and 1:34, so it's afternoon. And we have some listeners around the world streaming,
the world.
So it could be good evening. Good evening to them.
Yes, good night.
To the people in Europe and Eastern Europe. Yeah, yeah. So we're talking about the death of the American cinema before we came on, where you said that some people complained about how... Recap it.
Somebody basically wrote an op-ed saying, well, there's room in the market for a movie theater where people don't get hassled if they take a call or are texting and their cell phone screen is lighting up the movie theater. A casual viewing experience.
Yeah, it's called a bar. It's called a sports bar, man.
Sports bar, yeah. I mean, I guess I don't really see the need for that, because why are you going to spend that much money to sit in a dark room and watch a movie and then not watch
and text it? Other people in the room about the movie.
If there are people into that, then why not? I just doubt there would be that many people into that. But people went ballistic on it. They took it to apocalypse and were like, no, this can't happen. We must intervene. This shan't be allowed to happen. Not in a million years.
Yeah. Well,
and I guess I don't really care that much.
It's, you know, we've talked about the America of the mind, the thing people want to go back to when things were good. And I think there's a cinema of the mind where people want to go back to the golden age of cinema, or the golden age they heard of cinema that was before they were around. You know, basically that started dying in 1975 when the Betamax tapes came out, you know, the ability to record something and watch it later. Before that, pretty much if you wanted to watch a movie, you had to go pay money to go into a room and sit with a bunch of strangers in the dark and watch it giant. And that is an experience, but it's an experience, you know, basically when people say that's the only way to watch a film, that's like, you know, senators who stand up and give speeches saying, we need to preserve the post office because email is replacing it, and I want to get handwritten letters from my daughter at college, so there needs to be a law. And I know this person in the op-ed wasn't saying there needed to be a law, or were they? I didn't read it.
I didn't read it either. I just heard about it on another talk radio show, because I do consume talk radio media. Yeah. You know, the thing I remember movie theaters being useful for when I actually did go to them
was being
a teenager. Yeah, and exactly. You can't have the door closed when you have a girl in your room at home, so you go see a movie so you can fool around in the back of the theater. That was always useful. And then nowadays, I'm a big fan of popcorn, so I really like the experience of going and spending $18 on the largest possible popcorn and the largest possible soda, and then refilling it halfway through so I can take most of the giant bucket home and eat it the next day. I really love old popcorn too. It's just a tiny quirk of mine. I don't call it a guilty pleasure, because whatever, it tastes good.
For what it costs two people to do the movie theater experience right now, you know, we're talking like $40 to $50 for two people to go see a first run movie in a theater and buy some popcorn and drinks. And, you know, not counting transportation there if you don't have a car and have to take a taxi. You know, $50 for two people. And I could be wrong. It could be like 70 or 80 now. I don't know. I haven't been to a movie in a theater in 5 years. But
I went to see one a couple of weeks ago. Man, I think
how
it was
much
called
did you spend?
It's called Blackfish. It was actually a pretty good movie. It was about the whale that ate that lady.
I don't care.
In a Sea World. it was really good. But we spent a lot. I did spend $18.
That's what
on
I
the
care
popcorn
about.
And the.
What did
drink.
You spend for you and your wife overall from your door to your door? For that whole
Let's
trip.
See. I didn't buy the tickets. The tickets were actually a gift, so I don't remember. I don't know what they cost, but assuming they were $10 and the food was $18, I mean, it would have been 40-some bucks, you know, almost.
Yeah, and for, you know, if you do that 10 times, you know, let's say 50, because you got to get there and back. So, and, you know, hire a babysitter when you got kids. So, let's say 50 median for going two people to a movie now. For $50, you know, if you do that 10 times, that's $500. For $500, you can buy a giant flat screen and a bumping six speaker stereo system now. You know, I mean, you can almost have the theater experience at home. So basically that thing, that idea, the cinema of the mind of where you can only consume something in a room on a big silver screen, which to some people is, to old people, is the only way you should consume media. You know, I think that that's dead, and I think it's a good thing because you can still do that if you want, but there's so many other options. I embraced technology really early on. Like we had a Betamax like in 78 or something, and I was like, oh, I taped this one episode of MASH, and I can watch, I Love Lucy, and I can watch it again and again and again whenever I want. I like the idea of not having to be there at 6 o'clock on a Tuesday night or going to a place. And it changed the world, and it's a good thing.
I think it can still stick around as a vintage thing like vinyl. You know, obviously there's no reason why anybody would still play something on vinyl unless they're really obsessed with that warm sound and the feel
Emperor's
of the vinyl.
New clothes.
And that kind of thing. Emperor's New Clothes?
Yeah, that's what I said. Yeah, people who prefer vinyl, it's or people who say that vinyl sounds better than digital at this point, it sounds different, but it sounds less high end and doesn't have as full fidelity. And they might be addicted to those little scratchy sounds too. And they like the fetishism of holding the piece of vinyl and
the fetishism,
cleaning their herbs on the gatefold. And, you know, I mean, yeah.
But there's room for that.
There's absolutely room for that, man. There's nothing wrong with it. And it's absurd to write an op-ed of this shall not stand. And, you know, I mean, just wait for movie theaters to get government bailouts. They probably will at some point because the government industrial film complex is so invested in you have to go see that new movie where some force tries to harm America and brave government thugs defend against it, whether they're cops or whether they're whatever. I'm not going to make fun of any particular branch of people, but in the movie, there are always these magical people who can do anything and save the world and the government. It's a big ad for you need to pay your taxes, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I feel like it's also, we talk about the America of the mind, and that is one of the places it still is. It's not just industrial films, but it's pop culture, pop films. It's following sports and seeing the commercials for the Navy being a global force for good, which obviously it's not. They're on their way right now to Syria to probably cause trouble. And it's also, you know, watching a movie where, like you say, the state is the good guy and it must save us. And the movie version of history, everybody remembers. They don't remember the actual history, like Zero Dark 30. People will have it stuck. More people will have it stuck in their minds that torture led directly to Mirka getting Osama bin Laden rather than the actual facts. The people who were in charge of that thing don't even say that torture led directly to bin Laden's, you know, death. They say that the torture was inconsequential and people can glean that it really shouldn't have happened in the first place. But you watch the movie and it looks like that's what caused it is you torture some people, they give you information, and now you know where Osama bin Laden is. But that's going to be what goes down in the popular mind as to what happened.
And that show Homeland does that every week. I mean, literally, that's the plot of Homeland is, you know, the cool chick from that movie we liked as teenagers. What's that movie? You don't know what it is. My So-Called Life, I think it's called.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that chick. You know, she helps torture people.
Or 24, where
stomp
Kiefer Sutherland.
He stomps them. Yeah.
He stomps them,
every time. For America. Yeah.
For America.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think it's kind of shorthand, and the state loves it because it creates the same false truth, the same false vision in people's minds of what the world is, of which it's no such thing, and people should be smart enough to recognize A, fiction, and B, propaganda. And that's kind of what our job here is at the Freedom Fiends. We're proponents of propaganda or anti-propagandists, as we like to
say. It's tough too, man. I mean, you know, telling the truth is more and more difficult these days. And people hate you for it. People hate when you tell the truth. When you say, "Yeah, man, all these systems that are in place are not necessarily your best friend like the systems claim to be." And more they have all the power, and we have some. It's not completely unbalanced, but yeah, it happens. So, yeah.
Well, we had talked about, you know, what has led to humanity being the way it is. And I could see there definitely being something in human history to where you had to feel some sort of connection with the tribe. And you had to feel like people who are saying, oh,
to survive.
The leader of the tribe, he's full of crap. You don't want to listen to him. And if you were one of the heretics, you could be kicked out and forced to live on your own and have to hunt yourself. And like you said in the last episode, hunting by yourself, you're not going to be as effective as having three guys, one guy with a spear, one guy doing the spotting, one guy doing the decoy, that kind of stuff. And so your life could depend on how much you buy the lies of the tribe. And I think people still have some of that residual thing in them, like an appendix. You know, it's the vestigial organ of the state stuck in people's brains.
Yeah. Did we talk about Colorado yet? Speaking of various methods of government.
No, I don't think we did. Yeah. You know, speaking of, because what got us on the film discussion was me hearing about it on a talk radio show I listen to in the morning here. I think it's called Dudley and Bob, which is kind of a fun show. But they were complaining about the secession thing, saying and their arguments were completely ridiculous. Things like, well, how are kids going to learn a new state? You know, there's going to be 51 states. Oh, it's going to ruin the flag. How is it going to be a symmetrical design on the flag if there's an extra star?
That reminds me of that meme that's going around. It's the picture of like the Aztec virgin sacrifice throwing the woman into the volcano, and one is saying to the other, well, it's not a perfect system, but it's the only one we've got.
Yeah, or it's the best we can do.
Yeah.
I say no. I call foul on that.
Yeah.
The modern state is not the best humanity can do by any means. I am of the opinion that the modern state is the bane of society, a cancer on human interaction, and the species as a whole would do much better to figure out a way to eschew the state and all its works.
Yeah, so Colorado is trying to do that, or at least they're trying to become their own state, so there's their own tyranny instead of external tyrannies. Basically, this happens in a lot of states in America where it's a mostly rural state, mostly conservative, mostly gun-loving and hunting, and then there's one city where the college is, and it's where all the hippie freak types like to smoke the marijuana and burn their draft cards or whatever they do, and the people in the liberal city vote and have more votes in the district or more people and come in from other places and, you know, ruin it for the people who've been there forever, for the conservative people who want to just be left alone and do what they're doing and have their own little local tyranny or whatever, and be able to carry their guns, which, you know, I respect that. I respect that people don't want to be told what to do by other people. And we'll talk more about the follies of the winner-take-all democratic system.
Yes.
And exactly. What some people are trying to do about it when we come back.
We're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, not your dad's talk radio.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Yeah, it's the Freedom Fiends. Red state, blue state, old state, new state.
I like
that. The Time headline, actually. So I guess they're still good for sometimes a clever turn of phrase. Northern Colorado tries to secede is actually what the rest of the headline reads. And of course, we're talking about a push of some northeastern Colorado counties, spearheaded, I think, by a county called Weld County, that say, hey, we generate all this oil and gas revenue. There's nothing out here but some oil rigs and some roughnecks and some people who have land and want to be left alone. And all your invasive Denver politicking
invasive
needs to be
species.
Out of our life.
Yes. The invasive species of political people from Denver.
Yeah, exactly. And my point is, why not, man? Why should these people who are nothing like or don't want to be anything like the people who live in modern urban Denver, which are a lot of transplants from the West Coast who were trying to get away from the West Coast and the massive state apparatus in California, move to Colorado and just mimic what they left? And why should the people in Northeast Colorado be subjugated by that? They shouldn't, is the answer.
There's actually, I think we talked about it a while back, there's a newly minted young Republican state rep in Wyoming. He's like 23 or 24. And there was some lady who'd moved to California to Wyoming 2 years ago. From California, and, you know, lives in the Jackson area, and was complaining about people have guns here. And this guy wrote a really eloquent letter, open letter to her, and basically said, then if you don't like it, then move back to California and leave our state the way you found it. And please go away. Respectfully, your representative, blah, blah, blah. And that was awesome. And he was like, people demanded he apologize, and he didn't, and I liked it. Pretty feisty for a politician.
Right, right. Well, here's the thing is people will often say of people who don't think there should be a big centralized state, they will say, well, that might have worked back in the day when everybody had farms, but now that everything's so complex and big, we need that centralized state. And I say, no, it's just the opposite. If you have this centralized state government in Denver giving edicts to people out in the boonies when they have very little information about how those people live, why should those people be forced to join up and spend a bunch of money on lobbyists and try to have some representation and still lose out in the end because they're less populous and then be forced to comply with these silly regulations that did not have them in mind when they were written?
Here's my prediction. We reported recently on another – we actually interviewed a guy in Colorado who's in charge of a recall election attempt to throw out of office some carpetbagger out of state lefties who've moved in and tried to take everyone's guns away. Mm-hmm. And I think that may work, but I'm pretty convinced from my knowledge of history that this secession attempt will not work because there's a couple hurdles it has to pass. It has to get on the ballot. It has to pass. That may happen, but then the Colorado legislature has to amend their constitution, state constitution, to allow it. That probably won't happen. And because, you know, it's an oil producing region. They need the revenue for one thing. And another thing, just you can't let the slaves run away.
All of their welfare money comes from the folks out there in that county. They're not going to lose
That's a simplification of it. But yeah, it's
the
true.
Children.
It's a rent seeking thing. And the other thing
not
is.
Not only that, but the federal government would have to approve will not statehood.
Allow it. They will never allow it. And they'll probably cite, we can't afford to print new flags because we're spending our money on Bearcats. Now, here's why I think it's valuable for them to try. Because, and this is like the only purpose of politics I can see left at this point, is proving that you're a slave and really internalizing it. And, you know, it's another thing they say in AA, like you have to admit, you know, the first step is to admit you're powerless. And basically that's why you say, people say at a meeting, my name is blah, 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 I'm an alcoholic. You're admitting every time you go to a meeting that you're an alcoholic. And, but to initially realize that is to concede, as they say, to your innermost self that if you keep drinking, you will do it till you die an early, painful, horrible death, which is true of an alcoholic. So, people who still muck about with politics, when they try something they should be able to do and it fails, like making their own state, it will make them internally realize and concede to their innermost self that they're being treated like slaves, and then they can stop supporting that system. And, you know, we're not calling for secession, but if there were secession, we'd support it to the single person, to that level. And we're going to talk when we come back about a guy who he's not necessarily a secessionist, but he wants to be left alone, geographically secede to the last man with his underground house book. And we're going to read some of that when we come back after the break.
Need to talk to people in a secure manner? Liberty Private Network sells phones that will work over any good internet connection and give you military-grade encryption for calls that cannot be tapped. Great for lawyers and clients, business people with trade secrets, or just ordinary folk who don't want their love talk spied on by some scumbag from the central scrutinizer. Call 516-TLK-SAFE on your non-secure phone and tell them the Freedom Fiends sent you. That's 516-TLK-SAFE.
Ah, yes, it's time once again for Freedom Fiends. It's hour two. This is our live talk radio show on Saturday, August 24th. I'm Nima Vedati out here in Central Texas. We've got Michael W. Dean in the independent micronation of Nestlandia. How's it going, Mr. Dean?
It's a nation of two here in Nestlandia. We have not, absolutely not, seceded from the United States. Let me make that clear. I think that's a hanging offense or something like that. But we do exist independently within the geographical boundary. We are the micronation of Nestlandia.
And why can't you secede as the micronation of Nestlandia? Because
they won't let you.
You are a slave. Exactly. Yeah. That's the whole takeaway of the Northern Colorado secession movement, which most likely will not gain what it wants. And that is further evidence that you can't do what you want. You can't abide by non-aggression and be left alone at the same time. No, even if you are a peaceful person, you're still subject to the whims of your overlords in Washington, in Denver, and probably in your county. Even if they did secede, I'm sure they would still impose their own will on people living inside those borders who did not want to comply with whatever Sharian type society they made up.
Yeah, we proved mathematically in the last segment
that's our proof.
People in America are slaves, all of us.
That's why I use the word evidence. I tend to not use the word proof because proof is a pretty big bar to get over. But evidence is a building block of proof, a step stool of proof. And I don't know if we made the proof, but we have evidence.
On the show 30 Rock, they mentioned at one time that Kenneth the Page was a minority hire, and they look at him, they're like, he's like the whitest, most American guy I've ever seen. What's his minority? And they're like, well, he's a foreigner. His county technically never rejoined the Union after the Civil War.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate it when people bring up the Civil War as deciding that answers the question of can you secede or not. You can't, because the
people, meaning Supreme Court. Yeah, when people, like Supreme Court judges, someone recently brought that up. It was some author wrote to one of the Supreme Court judges and asked his opinion on, for a book he was writing on, could, you know, would this be able to happen? Mm-hmm. And he basically said, nope, it's proved in the Civil War. Can't happen.
Proved. Yeah, that's it. Mathematically. Proof.
They proved it mathematically by killing more from one side than the other.
The amount of people they killed. Yeah, that was the equation. That's if the math. If you kill 600 million people, then you can't secede. And they succeeded at killing that amount of people. No, it isn't. It wasn't that many, but so we it was a large amount.
We've talked a bunch about tyranny. We want to talk about some liberty and some freedom, which is building your own underground house for very little money that's not a windowless concrete bunker and is actually very nice. And this is from the – we're going to review a little bit the $50 and up underground house book by Mike Ohlier. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Last name is spelled O-E-H-L-E-R, illustrated by Chris Royer. I'm reviewing the reviewing the seventh edition, and it is available from the website undergroundhousing.com, www.undergroundhousing.com. And they also sell his company, Mole Press, sells this book and other books by him, and videos, VHS even, and DVDs of showing you how to build a $50 and up underground house book. Now, I'd like Nima to read the intro page on what an underground house is and isn't, if you would.
What it is or isn't, or do we want to do the 23 benefits?
That's it, that page. Yeah, there's two pages. That's one I'd like you to read right now.
Let's do that, because you might ask yourself, what under earth – why under earth would you decide to build under earth? And these are the three distinct advantages this author, maybe it's Eller or Ohlier, Mike Ohlier maybe, that he says. These are the 23 advantages. One, no foundation. Two, less building material. Three, less labor. Four, most aesthetically pleasing. I guess that's kind of subjective, but whatever. Five, less tax. Six, warm in winter. Seven, cool in summer. Better view, built-in greenhouse, ecologically sound, increased yard space. Fallout shelter, cuts atmospheric radiation. Defensible. Ah, that's important. Concealment. I guess that's kind of part of defensible. Closer to source of water. Relatively fireproof, pipes never freeze, superior flooring, can be built by anyone, weatherproof, less maintenance, and soundproof, but not necessarily sound conditioned, I'm sure Michael would add.
I think they kind of would be too. I mean, if they're made out of earth and wood, largely, they would be rather sound conditioned. But yeah, read more, man. I'm intrigued. I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
It's whet your appetite for underground housing. So on conventional houses, foundations are considered On conventional houses, foundations are a considerable percent of the total cost of the house. We eliminate that cost right away. In fact, the cost of pouring a conventional foundation is often what it costs to build an entire underground house. Foundations serve a number of purposes on surface structures. First of all, obviously, they support the building. Secondly, they reach below the frost line in cold areas to eliminate the threat of frost heaves damaging the structure. Thirdly, a foundation raises the house above the earth so that the flooring is not rotted by moisture. Lastly, they make a possible crawl space where there is no basement, so that the utilities and termites may be worked on without tearing up the floor. All of this is unnecessary. The PSP method is to utilize pole construction and to sink it below the surface. Pole construction is as sturdy or even sturdier than conventional construction. It was invented in Japan to deal with earthquakes. With a conventional building, you are in real trouble if an earthquake or other disaster crumbles your foundation. The house may likely come down. Pole construction does not crumble, however. Each pole rides out the quake, shifts around as it must, and settles back into place, leaving the building comparatively undamaged. So that was his take on number one, which is no foundation. Comments, Michael. I mean, I guess what I wonder is, if it's so great, how come more people can't do it? And my initial gut reaction is there's probably regulations. Are there Are there rules or something that make it harder to get a permit for an underground house, or how does that work?
Yeah, and that's the other part I'm going to have you read, but we'll discuss it a bit first. This book was written in the 70s, and I really like – actually, when I first started reading this book, it kind of turned me off because he has such an attitude of, if you don't live life my way, you're doing it wrong. I mean, he's very critical of people who, you know, are out of shape or watch a lot of TV or want to live in the cities or, you know, do things that a lot of people do in this world. And I do some of those things. And I was kind of insulted by it. But then I realized, hey, this guy writes valuable, valid, well-written tech books on how to do something and then throws what most people would consider to be way too much of himself into it. That's what I do for a living. So I can't really criticize
that's your
that,
MO.
You know, I mean, I write books on video production and audio production where, you know, my ego and my unique worldview is thrust into it entirely. And I've actually kind of been having some, I wouldn't say midlife crises, but midlife revelations about that attitude this week in particular. And I'm not going to go into too much detail, but I'm kind of rethinking. I think I've made my point of yelling at the non-governmental systems of the world and like breaking a chair over the head of every industry I try to enter and wondering why I've been working my butt off for decades and I'm brilliant and I'm not wealthy. And it's probably because I irk the people who would help me in every, you know, every page I write and every movie I make and every song I write. You know, I kick the hornet's nest and it kicks back, or it just stops taking my calls is more like it.
It's such a tough thing, though, because that's why so many people love you. That's kind of the attitude of the fiends that people really like, is kicking the hornet's nest. I mean, that was one of our taglines at one point, wasn't it?
Or yeah, but banner. There's a difference between kicking the hornet's nest of tyranny, which is the point of the fiends, which we'll continue to do, and just kicking the hornet's nest of, like having pod beefs with liberty people. That's something, for instance, I want to get rid of, and kind of like
it's a distinction with meaning.
Complaining about the whole system of how media is propagated. That's we don't need to do that. I mean, we can the mainstream media, like TV, Fox News, CNN, we'll still bash that. But anyway, and I'm not trying to give that guy life lessons. That was an aside in my manner, which he makes a lot of asides in his manner, kind of that method in this book, and it may irk people. That's the only negative thing I have to say in this whole book review. The book is great. It's illustrated. It's got charts, graphs, photographs, essays, directions, formulas. You know, the guy knows his stuff and he's built some of these houses. I don't know if they're still $50 and up. I think that was the 1975 price. You know, they're probably $1,000 and up, but still they're way cheaper than conventional houses. And he lives in Idaho the equivalent of Beast Lick, Wyoming in Idaho. He lives out away from people and likes it that way. And when he wrote this book, he said that he'd chosen Idaho, or he liked building in Idaho, because there were no codes and no code regulations. I'm sure that's not true anymore, because we know the creep of the march of tyranny, slow or fast, you know, between 1975 and now, there's going to be some.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I remember when I was in Washington State, I wanted to do a story. I'd come across an older home builder. A guy was like, '70s, '80s. Had his own business, had been a home builder for decades. And I actually started to interview him, and I did get him on the air complaining about a new addition to the property tax to help pay for schools. And we got off on a tangent about how he had done the math, and something above or right at around half the cost of many of the houses he built was due to regulations. It was things he had to buy a specific type of to meet the code, to meet the building codes, to meet the regulations, and that he could make a house for half the cost of most of the houses he was selling if he could do it freely. And here's the thing is if you say, oh, well, then it wouldn't be safe. Well, I bet he would have an incentive to make it safe and make it durable so that people would buy it and want to live in it. And it's only up to him and the home buyer what goes into the house, how the house is constructed. And if the home buyer wants to spend less and not have these things, then that should be up to the home buyer, not up to somebody who has no idea what's going on and is just a paper pusher in some government office.
It is bizarre that a home costs, it takes 30 years to pay for it, and that's how it's structured. And
isn't it?
I'm sure a lot of that is the regulatory industrial banking cartel. You know, the it shouldn't cost that much for a house. I mean, they probably should cost more than a car, but cars shouldn't cost what cars cost. And we'll have more on underground housing and alternative ways of putting something between you and the elements when we get back from the market, which is the free market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
What to do, fiends? This is Nima Vidotti. This is Freedom Fiends live talk radio show. We've also got Michael W. Dean out there in the country. He's a little more country than that. Isn't that true, Michael?
Yes, I claim to be in a windowless bunker. But I like country and rock and roll. I like both kinds of music, country and western.
Both can. Yeah, exactly. So we were talking about a guy, Mike Eller, something like that. He wrote a book called, what is it called, Michael? $50 and Up Underground Houses.
The $50 and Up Underground House Book, which is available from undergroundhousing.com. Now, interestingly, I mentioned this book to Ben Stone, the Bad Quaker, and he said he encountered this book for the first time ever last week. Someone had a copy of it at the Michigan Liberty and Peace Festival.
Cool.
That seems about right. I really like the species that this guy is. That's the best way to put it. He reminds me of the kind of an early hero I had in my life, which was my sister's first boyfriend. Not first boyfriend, but like, you know, I've talked about it before. The guy who – the Vietnam vet who kept a rifle in his car but was kind of a hippie and was really into health and eating well. This guy kind of strikes me as a hippie, which is not a derogatory thing, and it's, you know, weird to put someone into a label, but we're trying to describe a book, which is a visual thing in on a non-visual medium. So, you know, he's got a beard. He looks like Moses and lives out in the woods and doesn't live in the city and doesn't like television. And I'm reading his blog, and he has suggestions for humane gopher control. And, you know, most people in Wyoming would be like, just shoot them, just poison them. But he's got methods for getting them away from your underground house without killing them. And that's kind of hippie, and I kind of respect it and like it. And this book, I picked it up, and it immediately reminded me of the Whole Earth Catalog, which was an amazing book that I encountered, you know, in 1975 in the attic when my sister went off to college. And it was kind of like, I like that book because it was really hippie and it talked about alternative foods and alternative lifestyles and moving out to the country and being prepared to not have to depend on anybody. But it said to have a gun. It had 2 pages on what rifles you can buy used that are good and useful and how to learn to use them. So it was like hippie with a gun. I like that. This guy's a hippie with a gun. He doesn't want to kill the gophers and wants to find ways to coexist fine with him and have him go away. But there's a picture of him in this book holding a Mauser rifle next to the bear he killed when it came onto his property. And, you know, his life was in danger. So he's not like that Canadian folk singer we talked about who went out to commune with nature and got eaten by coyotes. He's not one of them.
Well, if you don't provide for your own self-defense, what you're doing is saying, I want somebody else to do that, or I'm suicidal.
Yeah.
Either option is not good. And so that's what enables the state to say, well, we're here for your protection. You don't need a gun. You're agreeing with them if you decide, well, yeah, you're right. I don't need a gun.
Yeah, and he talks about when he shot the bear in self-defense, he did the right thing, legally the right thing, which was contact the game warden and tell him about it. And the game warden came out and took the bear carcass away from him, stole it, and said he was going to give it for meat to a homeless shelter or an old folks home, something like that. And then didn't do that, and then buried the whole carcass, just destroyed it. Oh. You know, like 1,000 pounds of meat, whatever.
Wasteful.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the state.
That is the state. Like the folks who raided that destroyed all the deer meat that was going to a homeless shelter recently in Louisiana.
Yep.
Yeah, just
so
awful.
Basically, if you live out in the deep woods on your own and don't have a gun and are a hippie without a gun, you are basically setting up a feeding stand for bears that includes you on the menu.
Mm. Well, what's that saying they have in Wyoming? I think it came about with the whole wolf controversy.
Shoot, shovel, shut up. Yeah.
Mm, that's the one.
Yeah. So I want to have you read the last page of his chapter on regulations and how to work around them, with them, through them, beyond them, ignore them, all the options. Read the last page, please, of this section. On regulations.
Well, it might be a little too long for the rest of this segment.
We'll break it over
to the
next one.
30 left.
Start.
Okay. So, sad to say, the greatest amount of informing is done by unfriendly neighbors. Does he mean informing like an informer?
Turning you in for code violations.
Yeah, dropping the dime. So, when moving to a new rural area, you may be received with hostility, though this may not be apparent at the time. You may notice a certain coolness, a tight-lipped reserve. There are many reasons for this reaction, ranging from fear that you may influence their children in a negative way, dope, sex, to the fear that you will make a lot of noise or build something gross or litter your land with junk. People live in the country because they like it, and your presence there makes it that much less country. They may have used your property for years in the friendly way country people have of sharing land. They may have traditionally hunted on it or picked berries there or picnicked. It may have been owned by their family at one time. Your presence there may deny them these uses of land, deny them their heritage. They dread and resent beyond the words, no trespassing. And we'll be back with more Fiends in just a little bit.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. So much truth, it hurts.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the Fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
All right, welcome back, Freedom Fiends. I'm Nima Vidadi, and who do we have on the other end of the interwebs?
Da Bears. Da bears that bears? Eat you. Da bears,
bears
that
bears
eat you.
Bears on my internets? Oh,
nah, this is Michael Dean. I don't see any bears. I saw a deer in my yard the other day. That's pretty cool.
Good for you. Yeah. The deer and the antelope play where you're at, don't they?
Yeah. I live to people who want to live in the country that we're talking about, the joys of living in the country today, and the book, the $50 and up underground house book from undergroundhousing.com is where you can get it.
Mm-hmm.
By Mike O-E-H-L-E-R. I don't know how to say it. I should have asked him. But yeah, $50 and up underground housing book. And we're going to read more from his. I think this is a really valuable page that we're reading. And it's got nothing to do with actually constructing underground houses. It's about how to get along with people when you move to a new area, especially in the country. And I think that all the carpetbaggers in Colorado who are moving from other places should read this page, because it would probably help them tyrannize less. Now, they wouldn't move there. People
or listen to the fiends and they'll read it to you.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So, you know, before the break, I was reading, basically it's about how people will react when you first move into your new home on the range. And I'll just pick up where I left off. They dread and resent words, no trespassing, signs so many new people put up. Country people are conservative, slow to change. They resent any abrupt change in their neighborhood, whether it be physical or social. Newcomers represent these changes and thus sometimes seem a threat. If they have come from a city, their lifestyles are almost certain to be different. There is an unwritten country more, which says that you may do pretty near anything you wish as long as you don't show it. Unfortunately, newcomers, especially young ones, often consider this hypocrisy and seem to go out of their way to flaunt the differences. Strange to say, you too may resent it in a few years when some clowns come crowding in on the land next to yours. So it's to your advantage as well, for their peace of mind, to keep a low profile when moving into the country. Don't make waves, at least until they get to know and accept you. Not only might this courtesy keep them from calling the building inspector and other authorities down on you, but it has a positive side. It can open doors and turn you onto sources of information. Country people, especially older ones, the most conservative, are walking encyclopedias of how to do it information. They love to talk. They will be reticent at first about offering information or criticism, since they don't wish to interfere in your life. But once they see that you are eager for knowledge, they will begin an endless stream of anecdotes and tips. Slowly, too, you will come to the realization that they are just as big outlaws as you are. Many of them poach, and some of them have been making whiskey for half a century. They can no more go into town to get a permit to rebuild their chicken coop than can you. Country life would cease if that were the case. They can be mighty good friends if you give them half a chance.
I love that. I love that. It reminds me some of some things I read by Boston Tea Party, and things that I would like to ask Boston if we ever have him on in an interview, if he's read this book and if it was an influence, because it came out before Boston started writing. And it's also this guy runs his own publishing company and only publishes his books, which Boston does. And I think it's a good way to do it if you have something to really say. And this book's been reviewed a lot of places. I mean, Mother Earth, Earth Shelter News, News Age, Barter Times, Earth Tone, Mother Jones, you know, a lot of things people have heard of have said great things about this book. And it's been around forever. And it's the $50 and up underground house book. And, you know, his thing that he was saying about I kind of want to tie this together with what he was saying about when you move into a new area, don't try to flaunt your differences to make yourself stand out. You know, I think that kind of ties in with what I was saying about my midlife realization of, like, maybe I shouldn't come into a new industry and try to break a chair over the industry's head. Mm. You know, mm-hmm. It's not a geographic region, but it's the same thing. And people tend to be, he said, conservative in the country. And that doesn't necessarily mean politically conservative. It sometimes does, but it means they like the way things are and don't want someone coming in and telling them they're doing it wrong. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Wait till they accept you before you start offering advice, tips, or say, hey, you got to change this. You know, wait until you're a part of it, I guess, is maybe what he's saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because people don't like unsolicited advice, right? I mean, that's one of the
things. That's what the government does.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's one of the things that makes AA such a powerful and helpful tool, I think, is that people go there willingly, at least the people who aren't court ordered to. And the people that I would imagine are court ordered to just go there and sit there and don't contribute and get their thing signed and then leave. The thing that's beneficial is you're there to seek the advice. So people are willing to give it if you seek it. But, you know, you wouldn't go into a meeting and start telling them, oh, no, you're running it wrong. No,
I did.
No, don't do it like that. Did you?
Of course.
But you were young and brash. And I think, you, like you say, you've had a midlife awakening.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
The fiends have been pretty introspective lately in our personal lives.
I know. Some people are going to be like, God, this is getting so much better and better and better. And they're not screaming all the time. And they're not trying to sound weird and young. And then some people are going to be like, ugh, they sound like old men. I'm going to go listen to something else.
Yeah. We're still fiends at heart. You're only as fiend as you feel.
You're only as fiend as you feel. Yeah. Yeah. 50 is the new fiendy.
Okay. Don't put all your eggs in one Batman.
That was a good one you came up with today. I like that a lot.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, you know, the thing about like why something like AA works too is because people don't go seek that kind of advice until their butt's kicked, until they've kicked their own butt with their own bad decisions. And that only works if you made the decisions and you're responsible and then you seek help. And the government tries to kick everyone's butt and then makes them take advice. Like, we're going to ruin your business unless you buy health insurance. You know, I am still just astonished at the fact that coming up soon, I have to buy health insurance. And a lot of young people don't understand what Obamacare is. Now, I'm not defending socialist UK style or Canadian style healthcare, but that is far better than Obamacare from most people's standpoints because, that they basically take the money from everybody and then you can go to a doctor, not a very good doctor, but a doctor for quote unquote free. Not a good system, but that is not Obamacare. Obamacare is a legal requirement that everybody buy their own health insurance. And a lot of young people who voted for Obama don't know that and are in for a short, sharp shock of reality. Mm-hmm. Of course, the really poor people will have some money paid. It's really going to mess over the middle class because people like me, like my wife, she has health insurance through her business, but she works for a very tiny business who doesn't have to give her health care, but does. And, you know, they can't afford to give it to me because it's a one person business that she works for. Now, I can't afford health insurance, but I'm pretty healthy. And when I need to go to a doctor, I go to a doctor and I pay cash or make a payment plan. Now, what's going to happen is the rich people already have health insurance. Ultra poor people will get it practically free and subsidized. And the middle class are going to have to buy it. And when you're living to the point where like at the end of every month, you're kind of counting dollars and going, all right, you know, suddenly I'm going to have to pay like 800. I don't know how much a month. Health insurance is about 800 a month for someone my age.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really ridiculous. And my wife brought this up just on her own. This was her thought. And we've talked about it on The Fiends and I've heard other people talk about it, that this is a political play to make the situation so awful that people beg for a single payer type system.
For socialist
like the UK
style. Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Canada. Because it almost seems like it was built to fail. And what was it? I was hearing an interview from a guy who runs or started or is some bigwig in a place called the Surgery Center of Oklahoma. Which their concept is they don't take any insurance. They're not a part of the system. They do everything, pay cash or you pay us. And their prices are like a tenth for the same procedure. And it's kind of changing.
That's what Ron Paul
market.
Did as a doctor, too. Mm-hmm, he talks about that in his book, The Revolution.
Yeah. And the guy who runs this had the same thought. He said, when I read it, when I learn about the things that Obamacare is going to do, I can't help but think that this is nothing but a feint. It's a strategy to make people go, ugh, it's so awful. We tried the market way, which obviously Obamacare is not the market way, but it'll be branded as such. It'll be branded as, well, we tried to work with the market as a public-private partnership kind of a deal, and it doesn't work. So we got to go to public only. And this guy from the surgery center said he's got an incentive to say, well, it's not going to work out that way because of people like us and what it's creating is shoppers and Obamacare is going to fail and people are going to realize, hey, this is the model that works, the free market model. But I don't know if that's the case. I don't know if people are savvy enough and I don't know if there are enough people out there doing free market health care for it to work.
Yeah, what governments always do, the left and the right in every country, whatever the equivalent of the left and the right is in different countries, what governments always do when they want something is they wreck something and have a monopoly on it and wreck it and then get you to beg for something you don't want because it's better than the thing the way they wrecked it. And they never cut – they always cut things – they always cut money in things like providing lawyers for people who can't afford them when they're arrested for all the draconian laws. They never cut budgets on things people don't notice, like buying $250,000 Bearcats for – there's I have a friend who recently like had to get process served in Colorado and like looked at the sheriff's website of this town that was so tiny. The sheriff did not provide process serving, which every town they do that. But this town is so tiny, they didn't do that. And they looked on the sheriff's website and there's the sheriff and his guys standing around with their shiny new Bearcat. Town of like, you know, 3-digit population that can't afford to have the sheriff do process serving in that town has a Bearcat, you know, has an armored tank that can knock down a house or inject it with tear gas and shoot 50 cal machine gun at it.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have no incentive to provide better service or cut down everything except the services they provide to their, quote, customers. Their only incentive – because there's no competition. They are the monopoly. So the only incentive they have is to increase their control so they can increase their monopoly and make sure that there will never be anybody that gets to play the game but them, and to force people into paying for those services, because that's the only way they get the money is through force.
Yeah, and that town is in the part of Colorado that wants to secede. So if they're successful in that, that's who is going to be probably the highest authority in the county, according to our friend Richard Beck. Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Who doesn't provide any actual services, but has a Bearcat.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. He can't afford to do process serving, but I guess he probably couldn't afford a Bearcat either. But the thing is, the feds will buy it for him. Homeland Security will buy it for him.
Yeah.
Because they want the local police to be the paramilitary force. There was a guy in, I think it was Southern California, some sheriff's department just recently hired a bunch of new people. And the quote they gave to the media was, well, we're a paramilitary force, so we made sure to hire all veterans. They used the word paramilitary force, and we'll have more fiends after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. They'll be right back just as soon as this drone is out of range.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
All right, Freedom Fiends, welcome back. Thank you so much for sticking with us through the show. It is the Freedom Fiends Live Talk Radio Show. We are at the last segment, the end of our time here, but that means
Hello. It's
time for the Freedom Fiends Tweak and Review. We'll let Michael introduce himself first, though. Michael?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good, man. Okay. You take good. It, brother. I'm just looking out my window, windowless bunkers windows at squirrels and elk frolicking in the morning dew.
Well, I'll tweak it then. All right. So first, the state and its apparatchiks want you to kneel before them, and they're trying to instill that at a younger and younger age. I'm referring, of course, to a headline about a school principal whose policy was to have the students kneel before him until he raised his hand, and then they could stand up and go about their business, but not before they were done paying homage to their ruler, the principal. How long before you have to do it for a congressman, principal, the president, cops even. I mean, cops already, their whole thing is to make you submit. That's basically the biggest crime in America now, is contempt of cops. You must do what they say. How soon before they say, well, you're not submitting unless you're kneeling before me. Ugh. Makes me shudder. My solution is, hey, don't let them get away with it. All right. Next up, most mainstream movies push a false worldview. That's probably why I have no interest in going to them anymore. I still can't tell which came first. I can't tell if the movies are worse or if I'm less prone to indoctrination. But I don't know, think about Zero Dark Thirty, Argo, which basically ignores the historical context of the Iranian hostage crisis, Lincoln, which is basically just a lie, and the makers of it have said, well, you know, we had to embellish it to make it more movie-like, but basically sets up the premise that Lincoln worked so hard for this constitutional amendment, when in reality he didn't really have much to do with it at all. So movies, modern movies mostly, well, I guess it's been going on for a long time, but I consider them the continuing indoctrination annex. It's not continuing education, it's continuing indoctrination. They want everybody to see them so they all have the same false worldview. The America of the mind that we talked about with the industrial films continues to this day. You just have to pay $50 a night to go watch it. Next up, Secession of Northern Colorado. Good, your heart's in the right place, folks out there in Weld County. But I don't know. It doesn't seem like it'll go anywhere. We've seen similar movements in places like Vermont, in Arizona even. One of the big counties that considers itself just a little more progressive wants to break away from the rest of the redder state of Arizona. But what this kind of thought and talk and discussion does help to prove is it helps to prove that you are a slave. Not only can you decide to be left alone, but you as a group can't decide to break away from a bigger superstructure, central planning state, and have it be smaller so your tyrants are closer to you and maybe even your neighbors. That doesn't even fly in the American police state. And you know what we want is secession down to the last man. One freedom fix we did glean out during this episode, though, underground housing, and I guess to another extent, alternative housing. Maybe that helps to provide a way out, a way to opt out, which is really what needs to be done to advance freedom, is opting out of the system. And one way you can do that is think about opting out of the housing industrial complex, which we kind of do have. You know, a lot of the regulations and codes and building things can just make the cost of living in a house so expensive. And then, of course, you have to go with your hat in hand anytime you want to make an improvement or a change. You have to go to the state or the city council and beg for some kind of easement. I love that word too, an easement of the tyranny against you. Just go easy on me while you're using that legal ease. Go ahead and read the book. What's the URL, Michael?
The URL is undergroundhousing.com, and the book is called The $50 and Up Underground House Book by Mike, last name O-E-H-L-E-R. And it's a great book.
Awesome. And I've got a little bit of a unicorn chaser, or a kicker, as I sometimes call it. It's still tyranny, but it's kind of funny. Bear Grylls put up a water slide on an island that he owns. And the city council there, or the whatever government structure there, is saying, we're going to have to investigate that to make sure it's safe. Now, this is Bear Grylls, the guy that cuts open camels and sleeps in them at night and has a TV show about it. They think it's not – a water slide isn't safe enough for him. So stay free, fiends. Worms. And join us again tomorrow.
Worms.
Thank you for listening to Freedom Fiends with Nima V and Michael Dean. Make an appointment to listen while it's still legal. Learn more about the Fiends and download archived shows at freedomfiends.com. That's FREEDOMFEENS.com.